The debate over vocal fry, that gravelly down talk as opposed to up talk, is back. Comedian Lake Bell spoofed it in this bit on Conan O'Brien's show.
It's two things, right? So it's pitch, right? It's talking really high, and then it's also the affectation, which is the fry and up talking.
And to illustrate, here's Kim and Kourtney Kardashian on the Sway in the Morning radio show.
Do you know if it's a boy or girl?
No, we don't know yet.
No, I'm saying the name.
No, I mean, we don't know ideas, yet, but it's just like rough. Are you just throwing ideas out there?
Throwing ideas out there?
Yeah.
Out there. Last week, feminist Naomi Wolf, writing in The Guardian, cited studies that show vocal fry makes young women less hireable. She says they're disowning their power. In response, linguist Debbie Cameron blogged that what's really destructive for young women is critics like Naomi Wolf silencing their voices. Deborah joins us now. And you also say that someday we'll all be talking this way?
Yes, that's true. Young women are the people most likely to start new linguistic trends that will eventually become mainstream. If we look back at who started things that are mainstream now, and I would include, for instance, uptalk among those things, it is normal for that to be young women. The people who object to it, in the same way that older generations have always said young people today don't know how to talk, those people will eventually age and die, leaving behind them, more and more people for whom this is quite normal.
Well, giving new meaning to the phrase over my dead body, because, you know, that's how some people feel about vocal fry and even uptalk, which you say is accepted now. Vocal fry, stay there. The criticism is it makes young women sound disinterested. It makes them sound disdainful. And it grates on the ear.
Well, you can't really argue with someone who says it grates on my ear. But, you know, you have to ask, why does it grate on your ear when women do it, when a certain type of young woman does it? But apparently it doesn't grate on our ears when other people do it, because men do it a lot. Creak, which is the technical name for it, was very much associated with kind of upper-class Englishmen. Men in positions of authority who kind of creak like this. It's really not an unauthoritative way of speaking. It's historical associations. They're masculine, they're authoritative.
Well, in fact, you included in your open letter to Naomi Wolf a clip from Slate's Culture Gabfest. This is men doing vocal fry. Let's listen.
Welcome to the show.
I am bad at planning in advance.
Juice box.
This is not something that I have a specific tweet for.
For the next 5 weeks.
And the question I think you're wondering is why?
So we take your point. Perhaps men do it. And some have said that this might be a pendulum swinging, that this might be young women who've been told to lower their voices, lowering their voices.
Well, in some cases it might be, but it's actually quite a normal thing to do. It's not a new phenomenon at all in itself, creaky voice. And you get some of it in any time that you're kind of talking and your voice falls in a certain way. It's just produced by when the pressure underneath your glottis falls and your vocal cords are vibrating slowly and irregularly. So I'm doing it at the moment. I can hear myself doing it. And when I was on Canadian radio with Naomi Wolf, I could hear her doing it as well.
Yeah, there's a little bit of the, and I hit it a lot to myself, that gravelly sense. But what other people seem to be talking about is the drawing out of the word. So that there's, it seems, well, affected is the word that's been used.
It's true that I think what people are criticizing when they criticize iconic examples like Kim Kardashian is not the vocal quality alone. It is a whole style of talking. So there's more than one thing going on. But what people pick on is the vocal fry, which is just the voice quality. And I think they're really not aware how common it is and that they do it quite frequently themselves.
Well, and you were responding to the thought that women might be overcompensating and trying to lower their voices, and now they're getting criticized for that.
Well, pitch movement is normal in speaking. I don't think women are necessarily compensating for anything. I mean, I don't think it was like, we're criticizing you for doing uptalk, so you're going to do something else kind of thing. That's not how that's not how changes in speech work. It's not that people are reading the papers and saying, oh, we're told not to do this, so we better do that. These things come up more organically. And in fact, uptalk and vocal fry coexist, not in the same speech phrase, but in the same sort of passage of speech. You can hear people who have both as part of their style.
If you've just joined us, that's linguist Deborah Cameron. Her response to feminist writer Naomi Wolf's criticism of young women for their vocal fry launched another debate over how young women speak. And by the way, Deborah mentioned educated British men always having vocal fry. Perhaps some Americans might think that's effective. We pulled some sound of a member of Parliament, Jacob Rees-Mogg.
I would like my constituents to have cheap energy rather more than I would like them to have windmills.
So you decide. Meanwhile, Deborah Cameron, here in the U.S., there are women who have achieved very high levels of power who have had vocal fry. Let's listen to an example. Here's former executive editor of the New York Times, Jill Abramson.
It's very meaningful to me that I'm the first woman to be executive editor of the New York Times. I'm so proud of the fact that I am the first woman to hold this job.
That's a brilliant example. I mean, one thing is that you tend to get more of it, in fact, as naturally as you age and your pitch lowers as a woman.
What else is happening there as a linguist? Again, texture's one thing, and now I am so self-conscious about my gravel. But
well, that actually is the point, isn't it? This is the problem here, that all this talk about how women or young women speak does make us self-conscious. And that's kind of why I felt the need to respond to this kind of new iteration of it. We're always being told about what the problem is with women's speech, and somehow there's never a single article in the newspapers or a single feature, viral feature on the internet, which is saying how men let themselves down or disempower themselves by the way they speak. And you've really got to ask yourself, why is that? I thought it was really ironic that we had this article. You know, it is one of many. I give them the generic name, How That Thing Women Do With Language Hurts Women. There is a whole genre of these things. So it's not Naomi Wolf on her own. But it really did strike me as ironic that the woman who came to prominence for writing The Beauty Myth, which is a criticism of the way women are constantly held to these rigid, oppressive, critical standards when it comes to their appearance and their bodies, she's doing the same thing when it comes to their speech, and everybody's doing that same thing. And that's really the tendency I want to question. You know, we can talk about the aesthetics or the history or the distribution of vocal fry, but that's really not what I think's going on. It's not vocal fry. It's not uptalk in itself. If it wasn't those things, it would be something else. So when, you know, in the 1970s, women were constantly castigated for using too many tag questions, like, it's a nice day today, isn't it? Or women have been castigated in the past for, you know, not finishing their sentences rather than letting them trail off with vocal fry. It's always something, and this is about attitudes to the speakers, not really to the speech as such.
Well, and you are a linguist, and so you come at that opinion from an historical point of view. There are others who agree with you who don't have that background, but then others who point to the studies, the one in the Journal PLOS from 2014, that women who do this in job interviews, and I'm not sure if it's just, again, the texture or if it's the lingering over the vowels the way, for instance, Jill Abramson does, they're perceived as less competent, less educated, less trustworthy, less attractive, less hireable. Should women not respond to that? Are you saying wait it out?
Well, it is in the end an individual choice how you respond to a prejudice. But let's be clear that that's what we're talking about, a prejudice. We also know, and has been reported in journals like PLOS, that if you send out two identical CVs and one has a name that sounds like a Latino or a person of color and one sounds like a white person, the white person will get more callbacks. Now, are we supposed to say, well, change your name, people of color? I mean, it is sort of an analogy there. And as I said in my blog post responding to Naomi Wolf, I think the business of feminism is to work against prejudice, not around it. But of course, individual women do have to make a choice. They may feel that it's necessary to work around prejudice. What I want to do is make the point very clearly that this isn't some inherent quality of vocal fry or whatever that employers are responding to. It's not that, you know, if you took it to a South Sea Island and said, which of these people sounds more hireable to you? everybody would naturally have exactly the same reaction. This is a prejudice, and it's about the image of a person we conjure up from the voice. And another thing I'd say is, you know, we're always talking about job interviews in this context, but in fact, people vary their style depending on the situation. So I think the idea that every young woman going into a job interview speaks in exactly the same way that you'd see her speaking with her friends, and that everybody who does this sounds like an iconic fictional version, like Cher in the film Clueless or whoever, that's really a bit of a misconception, isn't it? People do know how to vary their self-presentation for different situations and different audiences.
That's Oxford professor Deborah Cameron. She's also the author of several books, including The Myth of Mars and Venus, editor of the magazine Trouble and Strife, and we'll link you to her blog. Deborah Cameron, thank you so much.
Thank you.
So, Peter, we're getting a big response on Facebook. So far, few supporters of Fry, and people really hate it on NPR.
Yes.
That's, oh, boy. But did she make you think twice? Weigh in, facebook.com/hereandnowradio or hereandnow. Oops, I just had some. hereandnow.org.